When we tell our story from deep inside, and we listen with a loving mind, and we hear our voices in each other's words, then our heart is in a holy place. We've been singing that song every Sunday for the past month, but what do the words really mean? What does it really mean to listen with a loving mind? I thought I knew the answer to that question, but last summer I learned that I had been mistaken all along. I thought to listen with a loving mind meant to be nice to people. I thought it meant to listen to people in order to help them fix their problems, in order to fix them. Because, let's face it, fixing problems and fixing people feels pretty good. And I'm guessing I'm not alone in this. But then last summer, I learned how to listen in a different way. I was doing my student chaplaincy, my clinical pastoral education at Bellevue Hospital in New York City. Each day I would visit the patients in my assigned units, and sometimes I would do rounds in the emergency department and the ICUs. And at the beginning of the summer, I set out with my big smile and my Midwestern nice, all ready to go help people feel better, gosh darn it. But then I realized those people didn't actually need me to make them feel better or get better. There were plenty of other people to do that, the doctors and nurses and social workers. No, I was there to do something else. I was there to listen, just to listen, and to sit with the patients and with their loved ones in their pain, their anger, their sadness, and fear. To be with them as a witness of all of those unpleasant emotions that they were feeling. And in doing so, to be a witness to their complex humanity. This kind of listening is not easy. This kind of listening is a ministry, and it may be the hardest ministry there is. It means being fully present to another while remaining present to your own thoughts and emotions. Not disappearing into the other, not just reflecting or echoing back their words to them, but being there present, letting the other person know that they are heard by an other, by you. Because only that person can tell her own story, and only you can hear it with the special, unique way that you hear it. Rather, whether you hear with your ears or with your eyes. When we listen with a loving mind, there is a sacred connection between the person who tells his story and the person who listens. The philosopher Andrew North Whitehead called this interconnectedness. When you speak and I listen, each of us is recognizing the other. Each of us is affirmed by the other. I believe that's what's meant by the lines in the song when we hear our voices in each other's words. When we listen with a loving mind, we listen to the whole person, to the parts we like, as well as the parts we don't like. We listen
not with the goal of coming up with some witty repartee, or having the perfect argument or answer, or coming up with a solution to someone else's problems. No, we listen with the goal of reminding that person that she is not alone. And again, especially for those of us who like to fix things, this can be very difficult. I remember one patient at Bellevue in particular. I had a very hard time listening to him with a loving mind. I'll call him Omar. He was a man not much older than me, an immigrant to the United States from the Middle East. He was dying of cancer, but he became furious whenever doctors made a suggestion of palliative care. It was hard just to be near him. He was constantly in pain, scowling, grimacing, and seemed like he had tubes coming out from all over his body. He complained about the food and the nursing care and his roommate, the options on TV. The first time I met him, I introduced myself as the chaplain. And he raised his voice, and he waved me away, yelling, "Chaplain, why do I need a chaplain? I'm a Muslim. Go away." Well, for days after that, I avoided him. Finally, I steeled my resolve, and I walked into his room, saying, "I know you don't want to talk with me as a chaplain, but can we just talk together as people?" He nodded that it would be okay. And almost every day after that, we would talk, or rather, he would talk and I would listen. Or rather, he would yell and I would listen. He would tell me about how much he missed his family, his wife and children who were still back in his home country. He would become very angry, explaining to me that he could never go back to see them because of his illness, and they could never come to see him because they could not get a visa. He would get so angry that he would start to shake when he would tell me what it felt like to have people always assume you are a terrorist, to have people see your beloved children as terrorists. And it was so hard for me not to focus on finding a solution to his situation or to ask questions like, why did he come to the U.S. and leave his family behind? Or why did he not seek out the help of an immigration attorney? But that wasn't my mystery, my role. My role was to listen. And so I did. And to say things like, "That must be so hard." Or, "You must be so lonely." And for all I know, I was the only person who could sit with them and say in a loving voice, "You must be so lonely." Of course, it's not only chaplains who can listen in this way. We all can. I am reminded of a film that I saw not too long ago. It's a French film from 2008 called The Class. This is a semi-autobiographical story of a young man, Mr. Morin, who teaches French to 13 to 15-year-old students in the 20th arrondissement of Paris. Now, most of these students are immigrants from countries like Mali, Morocco, Tunisia. And even though Mr. Morin clearly cares about the students and wants them to learn, there always seems to be some kind of disconnect. At one point, he gives the students the assignment of telling their story in whatever form seems right to them, whether through prose or poetry or photographs. We, as the viewers of the film, can see how some of these students truly come to life through this experience. One student from Mali, Suleiman, tells the story of his life through a collection of photos. And for the first time, it feels like he becomes more than a misbehaving student, a student as a Francophone African who resents having to learn proper French. And he emerges as a complex and unique individual with his own flaws and gifts. But even as we see this, it seems that Mr. Moran does not. And eventually, Suleiman is kicked out of school. And he is left, as the teachers describe it, just one more angry immigrant youth. The final scene of the film is set in the last day of class before summer vacation. As the students and teachers flood out into the courtyard, laughing and teasing one another, the camera remains behind in the classroom and slowly pans over the desks, showing the abandoned pencils and notebooks and wads of paper left scattered across the floor. Signs of life that was there just moments before. And in the silence, it's as though we can hear the echoes of the stories told and untold, heard and unheard. I watched the film again just a few days ago after the attacks in Paris and in the Middle East and in Africa. I watched it with an awareness that the film is set in exactly the same neighborhood where shoppers at a kosher supermarket were gunned down last January, and where police today are still searching for suspects after the November 13th attacks. I watched it knowing that the students in the film are mostly from a part of the world that is terribly feared by many in our country today, and that most of the students are Muslims, a status that some say, in and of itself, is worthy of suspicion and the restriction of rights and liberties. And watching it through this lens, this time, made that final scene even more true. This time, I found myself asking, whose stories do we hear, and who is left in silence? And when we choose not to listen, what damage do we do to the person whose story is left untold? What damage do we do to ourselves? What part of ourselves is silenced when we choose not to listen with a loving mind? Because here's the amazing thing about listening. It can feel like we're doing nothing. But when we listen with a loving mind, we are not only affirming the other person's humanity, we are ourselves becoming more human. We are being shaped into action. I believe that listening with a loving mind prepares us to act with a knowing heart. Really listening to the stories of others makes it harder and harder to think that those others are somehow unrelated to me. They are intimately related to me, because by listening to their stories, they have helped to make me who I am. The theologian Paul Tillich wrote, "In order to know what is just in a person-to-person encounter, love listens. It is its They want us to understand their intrinsic claims, their justice of being. They want justice from us. But we can give it to them only through the love that listens. As I said before, listening in this way is not easy. I know that I have a hard time listening with a loving mind, not only to people who are very different from me, but to people who are very similar to me, even to my own family. The fact that it's so difficult, though, may be an indication that this is the perfect place to begin to practice listening with a loving mind. To paraphrase the Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu, if there is to be listening between the nations, there must be listening between neighbors. If there is to be listening between neighbors, there must be listening in the home. And so I leave you today with this challenge. As we enter into the holiday season with its parties and family meals and get-togethers, friends, I challenge all of us to take a break from the political arguments and the gossip and the bad jokes and find one person, maybe a younger person like Mason, maybe an older relative, maybe